A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on May 18, 1997, entitled Spirit, Spirit, a Cosmic Drama. The texts for the sermon are Genesis 1, verses 1 through 5, and chapter 2, verses 4 through 7, and John 3, verse 6. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
The consternation in the heart and mind of a Nicodemus brought him to Jesus. Confused as to exactly what was going on in the life and ministry of this one, this respected teacher of Israel. And so he came to him, and Jesus responded to his question in somewhat enigmatic form, causing Nicodemus finally to say, "How can this be?" And I suppose that all religion arises out of those deep existential questions. From whence have we come? Whither are we going? And what is the meaning of it all, the purpose, the intention? What is our life? With Nicodemus, I think from time to time we all say, "What does this mean? How can this be?" We keep ourselves busy for much of our lives, frantically pursuing our penultimate goals. But there are those moments that dawn upon us. Maybe when we take a candle as a young person, maybe as a parent holding an infant at the baptismal font, maybe some moment with the bread in our hand, or at a moment of great fear, tragedy or loss, or deep joy and delight. Sometime or another we ask, "How can this be? Whence have we come? Whither are we going? What does it mean?" Because we are human. We are human. And after a cosmic drama of 15 billion years, the likes of us have emerged on planet Earth, able to wonder about it all, becoming when, how, who knows, but at some moment, conscious, self-conscious, aware of the other, finding voice, having language, able to express deep thoughts. And before the mystery of life, its wonders causing us awe, its terrors causing us dread, we ask, "What does it mean? Where are we going? And what is this human existence into which we've entered?" That is the source and the origin of the wide diversity of religious belief and religious practice throughout the ages and around the world. It was no less the case with the Hebrew poets and prophets Interestingly, that clear statement of God's creation did not arise until that people had a national identity for centuries. The creation account in Genesis arising out of the situation of exile, when that people in their alienation and estrangement had lost their confidence in their Yahweh God, believing, as did most ancient peoples, that God was the God of the winners, or that the winner's God was God. And in the midst of that rather despairing, exilic community, there arose a voice, a poet, who stirred them to the depths, reminding them that the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob was none other than the creator of the heavens and the earth. And he wrote that marvelous poem in the beginning, God. There was an earlier account, somewhat less sophisticated, but focused on the human person, the creation of man. And in those stories, we see a people orienting themselves and their lives around the sharp focus of a God who spoke and called all things into being. Obviously, the conception of the natural world, the universe, the cosmology, reflective in those Genesis accounts, was representative of the understanding of the age in which the poet wrote. It was a three-storied universe, the heavens above, the waters beneath the earth. And God was the great mechanic, the great architect, the great designer, the great clockmaker, as it were. God was a being, a super being. God was like us, personal, only bigger, more so. God was the supreme being who, from beyond, out of the depths of eternity, decided to call into being that which was not, and did it like a designer, like a contractor, like one who constructs a model. There was a kind of naivete about that account. As we look at it, 20 centuries, 30 centuries, looking back in retrospect on that account, the world is not the world that was conceived of by the biblical writer. But ancient people were not naive. Ancient people had all the questions that we have, and we have in those creation accounts an attempt to give account of the reality of the universe and of the human experience. And there is a profundity there. The Spirit of God. And in the Hebrew language, spirit, breath, wind, all translated by the same word, ruach. There was a chaos. And over that soupy chaos, the poet tells us the breath or the wind of God brooded or hovered. And out of that chaotic soup, through the brooding of the breath of God, came the cosmic miracle, of which the ancient writer knew only a little. And that other account in the second chapter, we see the beautiful simplicity of this Creator God coming down into the earth that was created in scooping up a handful of mud, fashioning a body, and breathing in life so that the man became a living soul. The profundity of an insight that saw the human person connected absolutely with the elements of the earth. But having something more, that spirit dimension that had given the possibility of consciousness and awareness and attentiveness, rooted down with the earth, but beckoned upward by the spirit, the human person, coming from the hand of the Creator God. The psalmist sang about it. Sang about it with delight and with joy. Every living thing, the whole vast created order, all of it there at the behest of the Creator's word, whose breath, whose wind, whose spirit enlivens it all. You take your spirit and we die. You grant your spirit and we live. The psalmist sang about the God who is the life of the world, the life of all that is. And that Hebrew tradition out of which we came, which we have come, is a tradition that's centered in that breath of God, spirit of God, wind of God. Poets and prophets, prophets with vivid imagination, envisioning a whole new world, endowed with spirit, looking for the day when one would come filled with the spirit. And the story goes on to the point of which one was conceived by the Holy Spirit according to the gospel. Jesus by name, in whose life and ministry there developed that movement from which we are here today, a Christian church, celebrating the birth of that movement on the day of Pentecost, according to Luke. For Luke will have us see that that which happened in the wake of Jesus was nothing more than the continuation of that activity of the breath of God, the breath of wind of God that swept upon that early gathering of disciples, empowering them, enlivening them, firing them, to go out and to tell the story, the good news of what God had done in Jesus Christ. And so on Pentecost, we recognize that we are preeminently a people of wind, a people of breath, a people of spirit, that it is spirit that marks us as humans and causes us to wonder, to raise those deep questions, and to find after God. Nicodemus came to Jesus in his confusion, and Jesus confused him even more. You must be born again, or you must be born from above or from beyond. That new birth, if we were to understand it today, would have to be translated from the understanding of Jesus. Because Jesus didn't know our cosmology. Jesus saw a distinction between the flesh and the spirit. And we certainly understand what he meant. All of us know, and some of us, it is true that we are dead while we live. And certainly that was the reality to which Jesus was pointing. The possibility of living a human existence without being human. The possibility of living as a human automaton without spirit, without consciousness, without awareness, without attentiveness, without that spirit dimension, that depth dimension. But we would have to say today, in the light of what we know about this amazing cosmic drama into which we have been caught up, that there is no such thing as flesh and spirit. For there is only one cosmic river of energy. 15 billion years ago, that explosion, that Big Bang, as the physicists speak of it today, 15 billion years ago, Jesus, would you believe it? 15 billion years ago, and they tell us it's not like an explosion of TNT, but rather the explosion of a musical chord, perhaps the most famous chord in all the world, Beethoven's Fifth. You know how it begins. Give it to me, Mr. Bryson. No, don't really. It's boom, 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 boom. You know that? That's it, you see? The Big Bang. And it's a chord that begins to reverberate outward, outward, outward. And as it goes, it does not fill space, it creates space. It does not take time, it creates time. So time and space coming in resonant circles outward, outward, outward for 15 billion years. And here we are at this late point of development in a cosmic drama. And we understand that we have been created with spirit that has become aware of it all. 15 billion years until emerged the likes of us, who could ask, from whence have we come and whither are we going and what is the meaning of it all? We have discovered that we are not flesh and spirit, but we are inspirited flesh. For we know that energy and mass are interchangeable, and that our mass is but dammed up energy, coalesced for a time, and then released in another form. As we find ourselves little whirlpools of meaning in that cosmic river that has been flowing for 15 billion years. And if we cannot discover the meaning of it, we have become those who can give meaning to it and create meaning for it. The meaning that we create in our lives, in community, with one another, trusting in that process that has been emerging, being defied by the mystery of its beginning, and being without a clue as to the manifestation of its culmination. But in the meantime, trusting God, who is spirit, who in spirits enlivens, fires the imagination, and creates between us and among us human community. As you know, this past week, Nancy and I spent a few days in New Jersey, and we were privileged to hear the English scholar Karen Armstrong, who spoke twice last Tuesday in the morning on the history of God. In 93, she published her rather significant work, The History of God, 4,000 years of the human understanding and conception of God. But in the afternoon, she spoke of the future of God. And she addressed, I thought, very profoundly the present state of the human family. We don't get a very good feel for that in Western Michigan. But the institutional church is certainly in trouble. And the manifestation of religious faith around the world that was once thought to be passé finds resurgence in many of the great traditions. And there is confusion on every hand. Karen Armstrong is currently researching a book on fundamentalism, which she sees as the desperate human attempt to resuscitate the God of the Bible, the God of that cosmology of the Genesis writer, that God out there, that clockmaker, designer, king, and ruler, a conception which was reflective of the understanding of the day but cannot carry the mail in our day. And she said, in all of the monotheisms, Islam, Judaism, Christianity, even in some of the Eastern religions, there is currently a fundamentalism which is a kind of a fanatical attempt to resuscitate that which is dead and to bring crashing back into history that God that has long since been dead. Well, are we then in a period of atheism? Much of the world is. Notwithstanding the resurgence of that fundamentalism manifests around the globe. In the long haul, where we are going is into the darkness of atheism. But then she said a most interesting thing, and I believe she's right. You don't have to worry about atheism. Not even if you're making your confirmation today. Because atheism is not a rejection of God. It is simply a rejection of an inadequate conception of God. Years ago, J.B. Phillips, who paraphrased the New Testament, wrote another little book, which I'm told is not a very good book. I've never read it, but I've cited the title many times because the title says it all. Your God is too small. And we are living in a period of time when the conception of God that has come with us out of the past is not adequate anymore to connect with our human experience and to make meaningful all of that we know about this 15 billion year river of energy that is flowing God knows where. But in the meantime, in the darkness, it's like the poet Keats said, you don't just sit down and write a poem. You wait in the darkness. You wait in the darkness until the poem writes itself. And so now, we don't know so much. And there are big questions afoot. But if we trust, if we have faith to believe, then we will not idolize those formulations and conceptions that have come to us. We will recognize where they are inadequate, where they can no longer connect with our experience, no longer give orientation for our human life. We will wait in the darkness, trusting, not knowing what will be, but knowing what can no longer be. And I want to say to you, young people, those who tell you so clearly all about God don't know, because we don't know. But we trust that mystery. And we have seen the reality in the face of Jesus and experienced the breath of God in community. And we know all will be well. Let God be God. And let us with confident trust move into the future unafraid. For you see, Pentecost keeps happening. Pentecost is simply the presence of the Spirit. In the words of the poet, "And though the last lights of the black west went, oh, morning at the brown brink eastward springs, because the Holy Ghost over the bent world broods with warm breaths and, bright wings." Pentecost. Breath. Spirit. God. Wonder.